Well, the City of Lights happened on the 20th of February, of course, and the 50th anniversary of that famous John Glenn flight is coming up. That's why we did had a bit of a conversation a couple of Friday nights ago from the point of view of the City of Lights tag and how the City of Perth got that tag and what some of you might remember about Perth becoming the City of Lights. People rushing, leaving their lights on, waving their torches in backyards. And ahead of the 50th anniversary, Mr. Glenn has thanked the thousands in Perth, saying, "It just seems like it was yesterday to me. I remember that view very vividly." In a video message, he says, "I know the people of Perth have great memories of those days, as do I." Well, it was not only significant for the City of Perth, it was significant for WA's Mushay tracking station. It was the first time an Australian technician, of course, got to speak to an astronaut, someone travelling in space. And several of the technicians have worked to put together a display for this golden anniversary. One of them, Technical Officer Jack Duperuzel, famous name from the sporting context, footy in particular in WA, but Jack is down in the space tracking end of things and was a technical officer at the station from 60 to 63, and he's our special guest now. Really appreciate your time, Jack.
Good, Graham. It's a pleasure to be able to speak to you about this occasion.
Yeah, it's fantastic. A 50th anniversary, very significant. And I guess that I'm glad you guys are doing this because the Mushay tracking station, we've got to make sure it doesn't fade from the popular memory.
Well, it was leading edge technology in space, and I was very fortunate to be able to be part of it.
It was indeed. Now, you were, give us a sense, perhaps we'll start with the practical side of things first. What was the role of Mushay in the John Glenn flight?
Well, when the project was planned early in 59 for the worldwide network, there were 16 stations worldwide, with station number 8 being Mushay and station number 9 being Woomera. There were also 16 ships, one in the Indian Ocean and one in the Pacific Ocean, somewhere near the Philippines. So by the end of 1960, when I left the Navy, where I was a chief radio electrician in the Fleet Air Arm, I was one of the first four people on the station in December 1960, when they were still installing the equipment and recruiting staff. So that was the beginning of it. And we were first involved with Mercury mission for an unmanned robot capsule, which did one orbit on the 13th of September.
Right.
Test
the systems.
Test all the systems worldwide to make sure everything was workable, and that's considered satisfactory. We were involved with that. And we had a DC-3 aircraft from the RAF that was fitted with all capsule equipment that was used to fly missions over Mushay and Woomera to test all the ground equipment in simulation. So training and testing, because all the staff were not only maintenance, but we were operators as well. So the next flight was on the 29th of November, 1961, was with Enos the Chimp.
Of course.
Now, he was trained to press different buttons in front of his capsule, where he was located. And if he did things right, he got a pellet for food. If he did things wrong, he got an electric shock to his feet. But sometime on the second pass, the system malfunctioned, and if he got it right, he still got a shock on his feet.
Oh, poor bloke.
So they had a camera on him all through the flight, and he was most distressed and angry and bared his
feet. So he should have been, yeah, of course. I sit on an animal ethics committee, Jack, and you'd have no more chance of getting approval for that today than flying in space without a capsule.
Yeah, and then the next mission was for John Glenn in Freedom 7. That name was selected by his family. He had a son and daughter of teenagers, and the family decided on the name Freedom 7 because the American space program was open to the whole world in comparison with the Russian program, which was limited to very highly secret. Nobody knew what they were doing until they did it. had done it and then released it to the world.
Okay.
But it took 82 days of delays and hold-ups and all the rest of it before John Glenn was able to make his flight.
82 days.
Yeah, there was delays and weather problems and technical problems, all the rest of it. He went in and out of the capsule quite a few times before he finally left on the 20th of February.
Because they had to be. It's one of those cases where you had to be sure, to be sure, to be sure.
Well, he didn't want to lose his life and have a big shambles.
Absolutely.
So he was launched and...
it was a... I must say, I'm looking at photos of Mouchet in those days and it wasn't the Parmelia Hilton, Jack.
It wasn't anything. Mouchet was just a little village.
Yeah.
And a lot of the Americans that came out, because we met all the astronauts during the series, or most of them anyway. We met Scott Carpenter first for the one orbit, and we certainly was Hicksville then, I can tell you.
Well, they would have been a bit, particularly if they come from Houston, they would have been thinking, my goodness, where have I come to?
Well, see, the reason for putting it at Mouchet was there was most of the staff were recruited locally, so there was a good skilled base locally, and we were near Perth for transport, you see, so we travelled every day.
And they look like, they look, what you were housed in is kind of not unlike a donger today up in the Northwest.
Oh, well, they were all well-built buildings. There was the main control building with the telemetry and timing and the control panels and all the teletype and communications equipment, plus a van for the transmitter with a tower,
yep.
And then a powerhouse, which had three big Caterpillar engines to give us 110 volts AC, 60 cycles, and had five or six powerhouse operators who worked round the clock 7 days a week to keep us in power. And then there were two towers, one the telemetry for the communications coming down from space on his engineering side and the health of the astronaut, plus the acquisition system, which myself, Jack Walker, who was the engineer, myself, and Jack Moyer were involved with, and we had to locate the capsule first when it came over the horizon in the Indian Ocean to the west at about 1,500 kilometres or more. I'm not too sure how far it was, but it was a long way out.
You had a series of acquisition aid antennas, didn't you?
Yeah, one was for the acquisition, and all the other antennas, the transmitter and the full antenna and the telemetry and the radar, were all slaved to our antenna. So when we got onto it, they all tracked around us. So we had John Glenn on the first pass. He arrived here at, where's my note?
Mm-hmm.
He arrived here at 11:40 p.m.
Yep.
And we had him for 8.5 minutes from horizon to horizon. He's gone. And because Woomera overlapped with us, the pass for communications and everything to Woomera was overlapping. So that was great.
You knew they had him before you lost him.
That's right.
Excellent. And I must say, Aussie Ingenuity did, the movie The Dish, which comes much later, of course, is it's a great movie, but not a very accurate one. You certainly can't play cricket in The Dish, for example. But Aussie Ingenuity, it came to the fore nevertheless, because I'm looking at a photo here of repairing those antennas. And it's actually it'd probably be part of the exhibition you're going to have. I certainly hope it would be, because it's you call it the original cherry picker, and what you've actually got is a 44-gallon drum. Somebody standing in the 44-gallon drum being hoisted up by a crane to get up to work on the antennas.
Okay. The thing about the whole equipment, though, we didn't design anything. It was all U.S. military equipment that had been modified to do the purpose.
Sure.
It wasn't something we designed or anything. We just had to learn how to use it. So that was the situation there. And then 90 minutes later, he came around again. And we had him for 8.5 minutes again, because both those orbits were almost over Perth.
Right.
And he's gone again. But when they arrived over America, they were concerned about the re-entry equipment on the end of the capsule.
Right.
And we were concerned that it had been dislodged, but the decision was for him to keep going, and he did, and we got him for the third time. He's a bit further north, 90 minutes later. We had him for about 7.5 minutes, and he's gone, and that was the end of the mission.
That was it. He was
so
supposed to
be. We were about 4 o'clock in the morning, our local time, and we were all exhausted because it was pressure.
Yes, of course.
And when it was all over, there was and Gordon Cooper was our man at the station there. He was very great bloke to work with. He mixed with all the staff and had a joke and all the rest of it. And he fitted in very well with the whole team. And after the mission was all over, we had the station director, Lewis Wainwright, had a telex from NASA to say that the Mushay station was outstanding on all three passes and most successful of all the stations worldwide. So we're very happy about that.
So you should be.
And we all had put a party on afterwards, and we introduced everybody to Swan Lager.
And the Americans would have loved that. But tell me, this 44-gallon drum hanging off a vertical crane, that's pretty smart. A cherry picker of sorts. Did you ever go up in there, Jack?
Well, they did bring out a National Geographic magazine of all the networks worldwide, and they had Mushay, and I was hanging from a more crude bit of gear. It was just a bosun's chair that I was sitting on with a rope around me, servicing the antenna.
My goodness.
And I wasn't feeling very safe, even though I'd been in the Navy. I wasn't very safe with that apparatus, so I could tell you.
If people have seen those antennae and the height they go up, they can appreciate your nervousness. Now, all of this is going to be celebrated on the actual day on Monday in the Northbridge Piazza.
Yes, yes.
And there'll be a link, of course, up to the space station.
Yes, and a lot of the children are going to have the pleasure that has been specially selected to talk to the space station.
Yes, indeed.
And Clary Olson, who is one of the powerhouse operators, is 85 today. He and I will be the only survivors left of the Mushay staff of 50 people who will both be there, I hope.
Fantastic.
I'll be there, and I hope Clary will be there.
Let's hope they both are, Jack. Thank you very much for being here tonight. That's Jack Duperouzel. He was a technical officer from 1960 to 63. Mushay, the most successful of the tracking stations on John Glenn's orbits. And on the 50th anniversary on Monday, and we covered this a couple of weeks ago, this is just a great way of reminding you, in the piazza, there'll be a link to the space station. I think this is pretty groovy, on the big screen. And children who have been selected, they've gone through a selection process through their schools, children who have been selected will be able to talk to the astronauts in the space station. The space station will be talking to Perth, and kids in Perth will be asking the space station. There'll be an exhibition of all the work that used to be done at Mushay, and it's free. It's in the piazza, and it starts at 6 o'clock on Monday. We thought you might want to plan to be there.